Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Poet Radio. I'm Chris Funkhauser, host of this program on WGXC for the past 7 years. And well, it's the third week of September, so it's the time of year when the Century House in Rosendale hosts the annual Subterranean Poetry Festival in the Widow Jane Mine. This year's edition, which occurred on Sunday the 18th, was the 31st edition of the festival, and unlike recent years, I did not curate the event, but was a performer instead. Sam Truitt, Woodstock poet and editor, assembled the cast, and Century House president Henry Lowengard conducted the proceedings. If you've never been to the mine, it's a capacious underground space with outrageous acoustics. Much is made of the fact that stone mined from this location was used to build the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a great location for music, for poetry, and other types of performance events. This year's lineup included 9 poets. As usual, a balanced combination of local authors and those who have some type of connection to the Hudson Valley. Roughly half of these poets have been guests on this program before. I'm glad to be able to share their work again, along with voices new to the show. What I've done for this edition of Poet Radio, as in the past, is make selections from each reader's work. I sequence the segments in the order in which they appeared at the festival. We'll hear first from poet, critic, and co-founder of Penn Sound, Charles Bernstein.
This poem is called Animals Are People Too. Or at least they used to be. I get confused as to what you are supposed to say. I wouldn't join a species that had me as a member. Free choice is sacred, so don't let any of those plutocrats tell me what to say here on Earth. It's a tough time for right thinking and left thinking too. Personally, I am bicameral. I use my phone to take pictures even when riding a camel. Just watch the humps and the bumps will take care of themselves. This next poem is called Pathetic Fallacy. Never mind there's no hole so deep you don't get banged when you hit bottom, or that the zombies have overtaken the Capitol. I still hear nightingale songs every time I see pigeons nosediving in early morning hail, whose icy spitballs remind me of paradise. This poem is called Capitalism Gaslighted Me. And so did Heidegger and Thomas Jefferson. God, too, if truth be told, the verdict is out on my parents, but it's not looking good. And I'm beginning to think I'm gaslighting myself. This work is called Resentment. The poet errant, ever closer to death, gets a rare acknowledgement from the congregation president, plus the handsome sum of 30 gold coins. They should give that gold to our Reb, says a devout follower. For Reb has always been a more devout person and a superior reader of the Torah than this poet. And for these reasons, Reb has always scorned this poet's work and spurned this poet's friendship. Surely it is our Reb deserves the reward. The poet errant nodded in assent. What little I have accomplished is as much because of those shame me as love me. Fear not friends. No amount of gold or recognition will ever rob you of your pride. The taint of the human. In an effort to make humanities classes more accessible to a wide range of students and boost enrollment, Hodgepodge University has eliminated the requirement for reading poems in all classes. Instructors will be required to offer prose summaries as the primary text for examination. Original poems will be provided, if at all, as optional reading. Because of the taint of the human and the human participation in environmental destruction, tyranny, and violence, Hodgepodge University has eliminated the study of human-produced documents, instead focusing on the non-human world. Because of the morally repugnant nature of much animal behavior, Hodgepodge University has decided to remove biology from the curriculum. We will continue to focus on non-human sciences. Because the non-human sciences lack the critical thinking previously offered by the humanities, Hodgepodge University has decided to cease all instruction in these fields. Classes will meet in silence. This is an extremely short poem with the evocative title, America. America. Something went wrong. Please try again. Something went wrong. Please try again. You see, I even memorized the poem for this reason. Something went wrong. And this is also a relatively short poem. It's called Shorter Russian Poem. Famine, plague, floods, rain, droughts, poverty, robberies, kidnappings, civil war, invasions, tyrannies upon tyrannies, and then the dark times came. See, it's a Russian joke. And then the dark times came. I mean, it's a pretty good joke, actually.
Next up, you'll be hearing the first half of Billy Chernikov's reading. Billy has a new book out, Minor Secrets, from Black Square Editions.
This series is called Lady Chapel. She comes early with her basket of roots. The work, any work, takes all day. Nonetheless, she finds time to clean, polish the mirrors, fold the linens, sweep away the trespasses. She is bereaved, but not for long. The graveyard is in flower, knights and bishops, her own mind a castle, bird on the sill. She can't help herself. The confusion of spring is inside her. This is her house after all, it seems. I thought she was the servant of. Floors gleaming, shutters shut, she is taking a nap, like every man. The whole town dozes, even the animals, chaste and fragrant saints in their dreams. Our Lady of the Belvedere is looking with love over town and country. She prays for us now in the measureless nanosecond of our death, the haven, the almost chapel between breathing out and breathing in, the time it takes light to take one step. Our listener of good counsel, she dignifies the word our with her solemn posture. She makes us possible, her hand, her book, her parted robe, emblems of her openness. Skips. This one has a quote from H.D. Mary is so wonderful, and the quote is, how could I imagine the Lady herself would come instead? Our Lady hails her life and yours, conveying to you her shakti, her juju, which is conceived of tenderness. Reanimate the word lovely for me, that I may say how lovely she is, how stunning in her confidence, The alphabet hovers in her glory, every letter at the ready. What time for you? This could be a poem by Mallarmé, a throw of the dice, a memorable crisis, or a constellation. But chance will never abolish the mind of Guadalupe, whose every thought issues a rose, till her lap, your coat, the darkness, are full of them. Our Lady of the miraculous image, La Morenita, the brown lady, more loved than any other lady, speaks to us like mother in our own language, till we are drunk with her. Greenest branch. Lady, thy paradoxical virginity has the inconclusive beauty of a word. My mind is not equal to it. My thought grows hectic as each proposition contradicts the rest. Caesura, tell me if that is your name or ampersand. Lady, in all enclosures I perceive thy chapel between my palms in a shadow, a number, a fact, a cove, a wave, a tomb, in a tercet of Dante or in his crimson cap, in boat or thurible, or in the month of December, in the secrecy of a book, or under the dome of the sky, accept my confusion as devotion. Lady, I confess thy virginity and its proof bewilder me. Broken emeralds mend themselves, I hear, when you make love, like broken hearts or sinners stared and branches leaf in fire. Can you use me in your army or in your maiden choir? Just this last one from the Mary poems and then the other maiden, Persephone. She is called Devo, Egyptian for God, who says, I am the mother of fair love and fear, knowing and holy hope, a window in the house of truth, mother of waters anchored nowhere. I draw the lines. I constellate the fish and the olive, Orion chasing the sailing sisters, that flock of doves, our Pleiades. I cause these truths, even death, to be beautiful. I bring them down from the dark of mind and restore them to brightness, forth from your very lips. Appear to me then, rovers and dreamers, as I appear to you.
This year's festival happened to occur on Brenda Coltis's birthday, recognition of which you will hear here. Her most recent book is The Writing of an Hour.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here. I'm going to start with a little, and to be with so many friends here today. I'm going to start with a piece that I wrote for Cecilia Vicuna's Insectageddon, which was a performance on the High Line last year, and where I was part of the ant orchestra. So we were running around the High Line dressed as insects. I was running around with Lainey Brown, if some of you know her. And I'll just start with something from Insectageddon. I heard a fly tell an eye not to cry. I saw a beetle thread a needle. I told a gnat where it's at. I gave a green dragonfly a purple ride in the sky. I heard a cricket say, let love lead the way. I saw a caterpillar the size of Godzilla. Buzz, buzz, buzz. From beneath my bed, a song emerged of circadian moon and sun, of pollen and flowers, with lyrics of black walnuts and acorns. I ask a granddaddy long legs, which way did the cows go? The spider points seven legs in seven directions. Does a spider really know or care about where my cows went? The writing spider told me the way, or rather, wrote the way down, and the typing spider made it clear by untangling the threads of a web. Buzz, buzz, buzz. I asked a bug for a bright song, a bug that was not a Volkswagen Beetle. The insect sang, and the words sounded and tasted like water. Love and satisfying minds. There was a mammal who knew how to love, even apart from the milk-fed others. To deprive mammals of love is as cruel a crime as robbing the permafrost of tusk and fur. I love and satisfying lines. Do all mammals?
Oh, it's my birthday, so people are calling me. It's Eleni Sikilianos.
Was a mammal who knew how to love, even apart from the milk-fed others. To deprive mammals of love is as cruel a crime as robbing the permafrost of tusk and fur. I love in satisfying lines. Do all mammals know how to love in satisfying lines? Like loving is linear, even with breaks and grooves, carries on as a doctor bursts through the door with graph paper in hand talking about my perfect heartbeat. That day on the Bowery, the passerbys became mammals to me. I knew this all along, but the veil lifted like t-shirts rising above midriffs, and I saw their exposed bellies. I thought of love as the ectoplasm binding the Bowery Mission, Chase Bank, NYU Dorms, Joy Ramone's Corner, Avalon Bay Apartments, Pagotia Clothing, Think Coffee, and the bookstore behind my back. The ectoplasm of love wrapping Bowery and Bleecker in bright orange gauze and lifting skyward. It's a strange one here. Holding. Outside the city was a house that looked like a hand, and the hand lay flat on the forest floor, and the fingers made wings, and the wings rooted into the earth. At first, I could stand up inside the house of a human hand, but each finger grew narrower, even though my dreams were draped over the arms of the furniture and covered the window. Hope was a fabric, a cloth. Prayers became strings and tied themselves to my ankles. My body became a wick, and only a blanket could cool me. Inside a dime store, I held shoes over open paper or plastic. I held the hand of a customer. I touched the face of the cashier, and near the till, we held each other, and there was grace and goodness. At this point, I hadn't considered a dream for it, and took the face of another in my hands near the carousel of revolving goods. And I'll end with this one piece that was actually inspired by the cave, and I think you'll totally get it. Cave. Here. My soul lowered by a thread into a cold lake inside a flooded mine shaft, 5 stories down. It felt like a color, not a sensation of temperature. If it were a color, it was chartreuse. I called for a UFO to show itself, and it presented as a plasma screen in the sky. A sensation like inhabiting a sealed can of wet and plastered grape leaves. It felt like moonlight inside a paint can. Please keep a lid on it, lest it evaporate, lest it dissolve. Like cave paintings destroyed by human breath. That day, I felt a handprint on the inside. It felt like bruised ribs.
Maria Damon, a professor at Pratt, a seasoned textile embroiderer and collaborator to many, followed Brenda, reading a piece she composed with Alan Sondheim.
This is a poem that I wrote with Alan Sondheim, and I should explain that the words hubris and hybrid share an etymological root, so those words will come up. Okay, so it's called exuberance, with an H. Eau de Her, P-I-E, Proto-Indo-European, utter, this kind. Overabundance of April fertility, April snow rites belie grotesque fertility, the hubris of it all, the hybridity of March-April interface, overlap, interlace, snow lilies, ice tulips, glacial hyacinths, gelid forsythia, humus under frozen water, milky substantive, gluey pale opalescent translucence, sticky fingered down the milk-dark seas. The exurbanites with their mocking smocks and smirks. Today we gave away our dining room table and four accompanying chairs. No room for perfection in our lean home. Perfection? I scoff at your scrofulous exuberance. H your way on out of here. And I, who had so much to bring, stymied in my tracks. And racked with your remorse for my bold exuberance, shame sets in, and how? Whom did I think I was? The wild boar mates with the tame sow, the offense against nature, the nerve of it all, the nerve of anything, everything for that matter, yes, the nerve of everything, neither to the right nor left of existence, much less exuberance, taking up space, P-I-E, P-I-E, Proto-Indo-Euro, Pi, Pi, here where space is filled across time and yes, redundantly across space, with everything, the nerve of that, unbelievable, a superhighway to the ontology of stuff, the stuffology of endlessness, where would you put it? In the utter of abundance. Gladiolus says there's beauty everywhere. What astounding presumption. Why, beneath my feet, every night I go to sleep and the world thanks me for everything. It's just a quiet little prayer like a puppy. Thank you, Gladiolus, for everything it says. Just like that, I don't even has to ask. Astounding, the world is astounding. Why is my stomach so big? Your stomach is exuberant, protuberant, exhilarant, and excalibrated. Are you enjoying your dinner? Stuff it in your maw, that gullet, that pie hole, that overexuberant, fertile sucking machine that is your mouth and its myriad organs, and glorious gladiolations all around, exuberific exaltations, profiterolic proliferations. Who lives there? Woes are going there. Whose udders are those? Universal cows, I suppose. Vaca universa, whose swollen belly droops above us, excuse me, whose sticky milk is the raining stars, nighttime dew on our upturned faces, our seeking lips, our furrowed face, whose face is the face of Mithra, and whom we call Mother Mithra, who guards the cattle, the udders, the flowing issuance. Holes swallow holes, don't they know? One or another, corral, who would not know the différence? Falling out, language spattered all over earth and sky, things from which benefit is forbidden. RR enjoy, enjoy, din, our dinner, maw, maw, at stum gull. Even just falling out language spattered all over the earth and sky has quiet, asked little, astounding prayer, stomach big, big exaltation, and exuberief, profiterolic exaltations, her, and if I have a bill of marriage in my hand, connected with a string to your hand, that is to say, the bill is neither in my hand nor yours, then what? Who is to say where the truth lies? Perhaps there is a division, let us say, things from which benefit is forbidden. To which one might reply, but perhaps the sages say, marriage is already an allowance, and then what? Proliferatio, there I, Ives, exuberance, for all things are thus connected, and therefore the greatest good is that produced by the establishment of proximity, from which there is no recourse but exuberance. Exhuder, pure der, pie, pie, ud, utter, over, overabundance. Exuberance, the attaching of an oath or rolling of an oath within another. belied the grotesque hubris, hybrid all o. So for example, a gladiolus or other manifestation in the autumn or fall of a year of good harvest. Oh, ran, exurbanite of an other nation, an uninterrupted flow of liquid, exhilaration, excalibration, excalibrate equals two, which a sucking machine can only reply in the form of flowers, get it? Who had her borders erased, way so on flowing, flooding butt in the utter of abundance, much out to there here Berlini stymied with what glacial hyacinths. Later that day, they cleaned themselves off. They were slightly embarrassed, but revealed in the greatest of soakings, dict revealed, gelid, forsythia, humus, gladiolus, and as well, bread said or but, what does flower have to do with it? What is it like? If we say as it was stated, it is self-evident. Rather, it is where one seized it in our presence. And that last little quote is from the Steinsaltz Talmud 1:1 tractate, Bava Metzia, page 61. Thank you.
As it turns out, I was the final reader in the first set. And here's a brief excerpt from that performance. I'd like to remind listeners that you are in tune to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
Chainsaws invented. Deers run house, then your orchid using thaw dots, skin, and escorts.
Why am I so tired?
Look forward. Radio's hiring. Gather foods, doc. Period, new tryout soon. Endow, link two, ferrous, reserve, ices, unmakes, near shoal idea.
Why do cats need?
Rang, amends, sprig troop, rarer, viable, true mode, decant, edge, step, devices, agent area, your server catch, epic tryout plan, sand, road, you then, info, ratio, onion, maybe, deprive, oratory, outran, rival.
Why do dogs eat grass?
While here, hope that owls take advance. Stage fathom any nana, node retain on opt irons, eaters, edit heroes, arty. May ontic tide react, later beam filing.
Why don't we?
Eat grass. Using quests, swoon, stock kind mother, you relook for ardor meeting you. Why is Russia invading Ukraine? Summing tuft peg. Why do we yawn?
An author new to me at the event was Callie Garnett, who read at the start of the afternoon second set. From what I gather, Callie's soon to move up to the Hudson Valley from Philadelphia, so be sure to keep an eye out for her.
I'm going to read. I've been thinking a lot about fishing. I just married a fisherman. And so I decided to read this old poem first. It's called Fishing. It's like you're going fishing and for a while you don't catch anything, but it doesn't matter because you might, and then after a while, wham, it matters because this is so boring and why am I doing this? So do you go through that again every time you go fishing, or do you find a way to exploit the early part? Wonder, expectation, feeling thoughtful, and forget the rest. And what if only wonder, expectation, feeling thoughtful, have a claim on you, your time, and fuck the rest, you're busy, you have standing commitments, you have appointments. Looking at the wipers, I have dreams of fresh rotoscopy, new sciences of movement born of love and spindles in the future, when animals were loved. Somewhere back there, by the engine heaps of carp, trout, pike, bass, empty buckets, Dad took me fishing, and I thought, maybe I have something to learn, like how to put a lid on it, the compound kind of polyethylene airtight seal on sloshing liquids, or I got so bored listening sometimes. He liked to explain about fishing. And silence he explained a lot about. It's being like fishing and other likenesses, building and fishing, painting and fishing, iterating dotted grids and fishing, with a fine rapidograph on no bleed. Things like that, all things he did, which, being actual, you would think had some purchase and stability in our father-daughter discourse, at least on the surface, at least when the latter whipped out its water legs and superfine and dimpling slid along the surface, but that we actually cast there at Seal Cove Pond seems some most minor coda in small print, like what the people who were watching watch TV were watching on TV in the morning. This being one occasion, fishing, so self-like and actual fishing, I thought, I forgot which lures were lake lures. The harlequin ones, I hoped it was the harlequin ones. All parts of nature wear their processes outside, like a bicycle. Bugs, fish, trees, pollination. This is true not after one or two casts, but even before, as we're loading up the car, I think sometimes he thinks I'm touched, like Jodie Foster in that movie. Like I can fish, but not remembering how to when I look into the plausible. It's like I'm wrong when I go with him to the pond, lake. It's like, it's wrong to think about a rank of big and little apertures along the rod. It's like pedantic when I try to remember what that means, from which direction, when I try to be instructed by the papillary spirals, when I think about a camel and a finger. In the Bible, I am ready to believe in such calamities as water being skin, or oil, or just a darker liquid than it is, a darker gel, inane like that, divinely boring perversities that never struck it. We get no strikes, we get nothing. An imp I conjure, a snatcher who levitates all the fish before us before we drift there and pitches them conductor-like into some more insensate part of water, some third outside part. This action, general and airborne as it is, still shakes some bells, the liveliest assurance of thaw here, hues of teal, so total sports equipment outlets glitter with embarrassed clear on our way there. It could definitely rain. Hospitality. It's important to me that I age into a woman of power. The dowager strokes the terrier and is not barred from snooping into any of the wings of human experience. on the potential uses of television for the preschool mind. This is the last poem I'll read, and it's based on the paper that was written by the woman who ended up creating Sesame Street, or at least causing it to be created. On the potential uses of television for the preschool mind. One, ability to name positive and negative instances of tools or furniture or farm equipment. Tell me something that is not a weapon. A cow is not a weapon. Two, ability to apply these concepts locally. Is a crayon a piece of a weapon or a furniture? No, a crayon is not. Three, there should be evidence that the printed word has some meaning for the child, the same as what is pictured, as number has amount. Four, ability to count aloud to 20 without help and to 100 with just a hint at the decade points. 30, 40, 50, 5, at least 15 consonants. Looks heard of peculiar. Six, there should be evidence of reasoning. Is this a thing that goes meow? Seven, ability to produce a word that rhymes with a blank. I had a dog, and his name was Abel. I found him hiding under the. Eight, ability to describe arrangements on the, between the, under the. Nine, art teachers have found that children rather well depict abstractions at this point. One child was able to draw how it feels when it rains on me, and talent gathers about them. 10, pretendo, a skilled and ageless mime, showed them how to curl up like seeds tight on the ground in the winter, slowly unfold like little lentil sprouts in spring, how to grow and blossom in the summer, wilt and fall, return to the ground. One child was able to say, how it feels when it rains on me. It rains past me. I forget what I'm watching or that I'm watching. 12, this is not the time to torment them with mechanics, but the concepts say a rudimentary account of how to get a rocket into space they should be able to manage. Remember that advantage has been gained from their entertainments. Having no clue where apples come from, Grover is able to build a machine with a mouse, a little wheel, cooperation, a dusty fan, a slide, a trough, a boat, and a cheese. This is known as scrapcraft, giving life to household objects, which serves another crucial aptitude, getting rid of trash. You have to want to share with people. 13, ability to touch the screen and chair lights up, and after a few seconds, the host says, that's right, thank you.
Erica Kaufman followed Garnett, reading both her recent book, Post-Classic, and unpublished work.
Night Hamster. I don't pay attention to hope anymore. Horse becomes landmark, only statement of catchphrases stolen. The ladies know I don't sleep much, resist causality. I'm cold in front of the fire, occupy gesture, documentation, asynchronous. Couch meaning in pharmacies, totes rigidified, like the museum on Judenstrasse, full of what looked like ancient clothes. I'm really aware of how identity shudders, as if line dancing through omniscient points of view. I want to know how to say, you can't blame homophobia on natural disasters, so instead panic on Flatbush, realize we're all increasingly fallen, impose questions, dead leaves, this coterie. Pre-classic. And this begins with a quote from Virgil. I sing of arms and of a man. The past begins in song, in open arms, gesture of a self. Sing to me, someone call out to another someone, an effort to affect accountable talk. Pony up, ambition test, drift sounds. Instead, I reach out past commodifications of balcony scenes, acknowledge that in fact trees are not the lesson, not a behavioral empire of focus groups. And so the sparrow misbehaves in succession, gets messy, So I ask, how do you respond in the moment of buffering, of static, of silent icon, deep fake leaves, common as if an invitation? Paraclassic, and this is for my friend Ariel Reznikoff. Begin this year's slip between behavioral finance and biblical story, hint of altruism, anxiety in the context of text, to begin beyond a place where people die, it rains without emphasis, light bulbs inside, location of audience, of person, a caterpillar first digests itself, then turns to adult structures, a puzzle to hold boring theory, and other feelings, like the rush of not jumping simply from train to train. Begin with frustration and empty chairs, a variety show conglomerate of the kind that seeks competence, not talent, broken axioms in place of an eyeball. Here is distance, then faith, then exile appears, a tree metaphor. So listen, please. I'm no longer preoccupied. Hijack the model who sits to argue shadows, active pipelines, get proximate to my own history, the chemistry behind how we become archaic, a melancholy sailor, a pedestrian mall overwhelmed by concrete. All small things wield importance purely to create new codes, resilient and vibrant. And the last thing I'm going to read is the first chunk of something that is very new. I hope it sounds okay. The Lost Year, a travelogue. She who crosses law marks a chorus of impression shorn right for raising land, dormant, man-made, source of power dips in pond with crooked smile. Still a smile, visible. You can't experience inflation without beauty, significant physically, in ghost story foreclosure. I see through, gut, any rotunda space of empathy. Up for buying empty business, God's sworn right to make up ground, smile as crooked, shared way to break binds, overstep law, whilst overgrown. A signal daffodil, ants at the base, a tree given season, cliche, and maturity. Use contour as choice, guided tour practice, collective as responsibility. Or a way to enter some mornings with relation to it. 2 years of dead grass, of anonymous comments, of stink bug fantasies, a return to something might not exist anymore. Windex physically, fair sounds, frog sounds, small town traffic, catastrophe of the reason for catastrophe or the reason for clean sheets. Finally, examine access. Unaltered, constant production leaves production out of you're visible, leaves form in proximity, frame inability as cold dynamics in relation to the question of relation, a way to believe in hallway conversations, shoe metrics, repair party rationale for now performativity drawings or how I choose to travel and thus particular, get thrown, learn to value fan clubs, future monocle, dyke bar urgency determines when to think of myself on loan to new haphazard machines of representation. Dance, you do it daily. Let the animals in, fingerprint a pause, then explode. Heed what we swallow when we swallow ourselves, seasonal, productive as adult training wheels. So what if I can't rationalize capital, a form of comfort packing, archaic like talking through photos simply, more than sales, intermittent in costume, another monster, garish, long-legged assemblage of greenery and phobic instincts, I being the one who lacks coupling, garage stuffed, spine exposed. Thank you.
Kimberly Lyons was up next. And in addition to her writing, I think everyone appreciated her comments about reading in the space we were in.
The situation that this is a willed excavation, this place is a willed excavation, might mean that we're still shaping it with our energies, and I think it's a good thing that we're projecting and inscribing our poetry and our music here, kind of giving the space something back rather than extracting.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So when I got the kind invitation from Sam and Henry to read, I had just started to read this Porphyry on the Cave of the Nymphs. So I thought, in honor of that wonderful coincidence and the poem itself, I would read this, which is a translation by Porphyry, 3rd century philosopher, from the Greek of Homer, and that he later comments extensively on this section of the Odyssey. Porphyry on the Cave of the Nymphs in the Odyssey. And at the head of the harbor is a slender-leaved olive, and nearby it a lovely and murky cave sacred to the nymphs called naiads. Within are craters and amphoras of stone where bees lay up stores of honey. Inside, too, are massive stone looms, and there the nymphs weave sea-purple cloth, a wonder to see. The water flows unceasingly. The cave has two gates, the one from the north, a path for men to descend, while the other, toward the south, is divine. Men do not enter by this one, but it is rather a path for immortals. And this translation was by Robert Lamberton and a group of student translators at SUNY Buffalo, I believe. It's a Station Hill book. So I'm going to read two short prose sections from my memoir, As If. The Meadow. One late morning, I walked up the slight hill to the meadow where my sister Dee and my mother Bee and I had scattered flower seeds years ago in the upper Midwest. On land just east of the large glacial lake, the grass is long and silver, and there among the stalks are scattered wildflowers. Not many, not enough to convey the rapture of a full meadow, but enough that one is surprised, wandering among the thigh-high grass, to notice a vivid, bright blue flower almost hidden between the stems. I sat down on the bench at the top of the sloping meadow and dreamed a little in the gauzy late morning light. Turning my head slightly, sleepily to the left, I noticed among the trees at the woodline a man standing. My heart pounding, I slowly sat up and watched him. He faced away from me and rocked a little, just a little, and he was also watching something intently deeper in the woods. I noticed to my astonishment that he wore fringed brown clothing from shirt to pants, like buckskin. He had a long braided ponytail and tucked at the end into his shirt. I stared and sat still, as though any movement would disturb this man whom I knew, felt, was there and not there. I stared until I saw that he wore a long trail of withered brown leaves dangling off a branch, slightly moving in the wind, the air dissipating the leaves, riddled with holes, filled with shadows. Later that night, we sat on the old wooden porch in the moonlight. Head back on the rocking chair, I watched the wide, verticous, green-gray sky and the full moon that lay behind a swath of filmy, slow-moving clouds until one detached and became a low, long crocodile that swallowed the moon in a slow undulation of a gulp. The moon moved serenely through the crocodile gut, untouched by its bile, until it came out the other end and became, in the trick of a magician's white lace handkerchief, a hot white eye in the monstrous grimacing face of a demonic pumpkin, which yawned at us on earth and seemed to snarl without menace or purpose. This snarling apparition contorted in the moon's milky wind into an enormous hair that moved backwards, away with a grimacing stare into galactic space. Mediolanum. The seven of us gathered at the entrance to St. Patrick's Well, perched at the edge of the tuft, and then started the journey down the exactingly cut cool stone. The cool stone Roman double helix ramps of 248 steps that completely filled the well. As we descended, the stone floor came into view and seemed to be filled with a honey-colored light that sifted in from the 70 windows situated within the thick walls.
Our voices clarified and were made resonant within the stone cistern. A wooden chair was positioned on two crossboards over the floor of the well, and around it glittered a sea of copper pennies. I finally stood at the bottom, and my eyes met the deep brown eyes of T, who had introduced us to this place and who had walked down with me. We exchanged information in our gaze, although I could not put in words just what was the information transmitted between us. The Romans. How overwhelmingly and superbly they forced their will, and how one could feel that murderous will still. Only later did I find out this very place was named after the cavern at Station Island in Ireland, rumored to be an entrance to purgatory. Only later reading of how the Romans at one point, after much effort, destroyed for a time the Celts in France. I felt a wave of emotion I couldn't identify or describe for the strange Via Heraclea trekking people of Mediolanum. "I am a Villa Catacina," is the inscription over one of the Etruscan tombs near the well. I say her name to myself, for the encyclopedia tells that this second name is of the Celtic peoples. I try to find in myself the Celtic reverberation that blood may impart. It comes but slowly in a drifts of emotion and attraction that spiral as the ramped stairwell that entwine and drift away. Thank you.
Michael Ruby was the final poet who read, presenting one long piece. Due to time constraints, all of it can't be played, but this excerpt offers what I think is a fair representation of Ruby's message. You have been listening to Poet Radio on WGXC, September 2022 edition. Catch everybody next month.
Views of the Statue of Liberty from the F train between the Smith 9th Street and Carroll Street stations. For Joe Ellen. The Statue of Liberty looks white today, only a little less white than the rainy sky. In the landscape of Western Brooklyn, the Statue of Liberty has too much competition. Despite what they say at the University of Chicago, there can be too much competition. The Statue of Liberty raises its torch for no one, lights the way for no one. Today, the Statue of Liberty shrinks the longer I look at it, shrinks to the size of a homunculus. The Statue of Liberty is a stalwart in the fog, the last person standing, the victor in the distance. The Statue of Liberty reproaches us. It has become smaller, but won't disappear. Like a racist volunteer Florida security guard, the Statue of Liberty stands its ground as the gray clouds roll in. The Statue of Liberty doesn't face me today. I get its left shoulder, a cold shoulder. The view of the Statue of Liberty is about to be blocked by an ocean liner that looks like a wedding cake. Today, the Statue of Liberty faces me, speaks to me, out talking the steeples and container cranes of Brooklyn's waterfront. The Statue of Liberty is still there. I feel like it's yelling and no one's listening. I love looking at the Statue of Liberty through the windows of a passing train, a kaleidoscope with the Statue of Liberty briefly at the center. The Statue of Liberty does not change. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. The Statue of Liberty looks far away, like it's on a ship sailing away. The Statue of Liberty looks large again, very large, menacingly large. Sometimes the Statue of Liberty is hard to find. And when you do find it, it seems small and irrelevant. The Statue of Liberty looks like it's giving someone the finger. The Statue of Liberty speaks to me, but I'm not sure what she says. Be one among many? That would be worldly wisdom. It isn't e pluribus unum. The Statue of Liberty flickers through the windows of a passing train. Today, the Statue of Liberty follows me like the Antwerp Cathedral once did, follows me everywhere I go. The Statue of Liberty hasn't changed. What's changed then? We've changed. The Statue of Liberty doesn't face us anymore. It certainly doesn't face the huddled masses. It doesn't even face the refugees we've created in the Middle East. It's delightful, simply delightful, as the author of the Pillow Book would say, to look at the Statue of Liberty, even if I have nothing to say about it today. The Statue of Liberty thrives in the fog, no ifs, ands, or buts. The fog amplifies its message, whatever we take it to be. The Statue of Liberty's patina, the exact color, verdigris, looks best under graying skies. Today, the Statue of Liberty's lit torch stands out for some atmospheric reason. The Statue of Liberty always repeats the same gesture. The effect varies with the weather and light, but the actual gesture never changes. What is the Statue of Liberty once people no longer arrive in New York by boat? The Statue of Liberty used to hold up a torch and light the way, but now it waves goodbye, endlessly goodbye. Today, even the Statue of Liberty is fogged out. Nothing but our little world, Brooklyn, once small time, now big time. The Statue of Liberty seems energized on this hazy and hot day. Its torch burns bright, brighter than usual. Something has changed about the Statue of Liberty. In all kinds of weather, it has become more assertive. What could that mean? More assertive to me, right? The Statue of Liberty faces us here in Brooklyn today. It holds up its torch to us. I don't know why. Today, for the first time in a long time, I forgot to look at the Statue of Liberty. On this rainy day, the Statue of Liberty is the last thing there on the western horizon, the last woman standing.